Hello, my name is Luca, and welcome back to another episode of Sport Within the Mind podcast, where we take a deeper dive into the mental challenges faced within sport to another level. In today's show, we'll be speaking to an ex-professional athlete to give his insight into the different mental pressures he experienced when competing at the highest level. Currently with the Olympic Games going on in Paris, what better time than now to introduce onto the show the former two-time Commonwealth winner, world record holder for the 5,000 metres Olympic Games finalist in 1984 for Team GB, David Moorcroft OBE.
No slacking at all, and he could be on for that world record. David Moorcroft is pouring it on. It's a tremendous run. He's inside, he must get it. He's well inside. He smashed it wide open. He's taken the biggest bite out of it that we've ever seen in modern time.
That was the moment when Team GB runner David Moorcroft OBE crossed the finish line to break the world record in Oslo. And here he is joining us now.
How are you doing, David?
I'm very well, thanks, Luca.
I just wanted to just kind of talk about the expectation to win. So we've seen in the past athletes of, these days athletes in social media, they make it very clear that if they're just suffering with mental health. I've kind of seen it with Simone Biles at the Olympics recently, with when she didn't actually, she gave short notice that she couldn't compete for mental health issues. So Emma Raducanu with her panic attacks at the Wimbledon. So did you ever experience this when you performed?
I was really fortunate in the sense of I competed ages ago, so I'm a bit of a dinosaur now. So I was competing in the 1970s and 1980s. So we all had high expectations of ourselves. We all had ups and downs in our lives. We all dealt with the stress in different ways. But what we didn't have was social media. It was very much the amateur era. So we were pretty much answerable only to ourselves and those closest to us. And obviously we understood that the public had expectations and wants and desires, but it was nothing like the profile now and nothing like the pressure that exists. So I had great moments. I, you know, broke a world record and it was fantastic. But I had dismal moments as well when I came last in the Olympic Games. But the family were massively supportive, my coach and others, I didn't really feel like I'd let the public down, and I didn't really feel like there was going to be an avalanche of negative publicity generated my way. I had to deal with the press, you know, and their reaction. But it was a different era, and it wasn't either better or worse, but it was different.
Yeah. Do you think that was maybe because I know you had teammates at that point, British running was like, it was very competitive. Do you think if maybe you didn't perform, then the other Brits would kind of take the limelight in a sense?
Well, it was in a generation that people of a certain age will remember, but others wouldn't. And it was... you know, the biggest names were Sebastian Coe, Steve Ovett, Steve Cram, Daley Thompson, those sort of people. And they took a lot of the limelight. And ironically, they probably took a bit of the pressure away. You know, when I, you know, competed in a major championship, I competed in the European Championship, Steve Ovett when I came third. But the focus was on Steve Ovett and not would he win, but how much would he win by. So, you know, although I was desperate to beat him and I was kind of disappointed I didn't, I met the expectations of the media and the public. So so it's a double-edged sword, really, in that you know, we were highly competitive, trained incredibly hard, but we all got on pretty well as friends, although we were great rivals as well. And I tried to be inspired by their great performances and the performances of athletes before me. You know, the likes of Brendan Foster and Dave Bedford, who are even older than I am. But they, you know, their performances were inspirational. And also at that time, the kind of great wealth of talent in Africa hadn't quite emerged. So British athletes at that time were pretty dominant across the world.
Yeah. To talk about one of your major successes as you came into the start of your career, obviously the 1978 gold medal in the 1500 metres. How did you kind of deal with that pressure? Did the mentality ever change? So when you went into a competition beforehand, you kind of just go into it like, oh, I'm just a normal athlete, I'm kind of not expected to win this. And how did that kind of change after you won that gold medal? Because it's like, well, now do I then have to go and win in the 1980 in Moscow? How does that change?
Yeah, it's a good question. I've been to the 1976 Olympic Games with no expectation and made the final, and that was great. 1978, I watched one of my heroes, a guy called Philbert Bailly, who at the previous Commonwealth Games had smashed the world record. So he was in the field, as were other, you know, terrific athletes from all over the Commonwealth. And I was sharing with Brendan Foster a room, and he kind of said to me beforehand, I think you can win this. And he didn't say, I think you will win it, but I think you can. And my coach said the same. And it kind of dawned on me really about, you know, a few hours before the race that not only could I get a medal, but maybe I could win. It was slightly helped by the fact that Phil Babai had recently been suffering from malaria, poor bloke. Wow. So anyway, and as I said to Linda, my wife, who was a spectator, I saw her before the race. I said, I think I can win this. And I choked up. And that was the first time really in my career where I went into a race with a high level of expectation, but a high level of emotional response. And obviously the emotional response at the end of it was great because I won. I then, as you said, experienced ups and downs, went to the Moscow Olympic Games in the 5,000 metres and didn't make it beyond the semi-final. I got a stomach bug. And then that took me to a really low level. And the rest of my career was a bit like that. I think the thing I was trying to explain is that for all the highs and lows, and we're kind of a bit weird, athletes are, we're really highly strung, very highly motivated, take things very personally, both success and failure. Little bit of the stiff upper lip British thing, you know, managing to face the media and everything. But I think I managed to handle defeat reasonably well, but it hurt hugely. But the crucial thing, and I think the difference between then and now, is that it hurt for me. And it hurt those people closest to me because they knew I was hurt. But I didn't quite have that kind of media exposure or social media exposure that brought a load of other people in to have an opinion. And I think that's where some of the athletes now who suffer from mental health issues just feel an incredible amount of pressure, really, when they shouldn't.
Do you think it's now much harder to be consistently successful because of the backlash on social media or the toxicity on social media?
I think that can be the case for sure. I haven't experienced it, but you know that you go from hero to zero. So we saw with the Euros recently that, you know, at one stage in the tournament, you know, the players were getting, and Southgate was getting hammered, were getting hammered in social media. And then they had a few days of grace prior to the final, when it was, you know, football's coming home and all the usual stuff. Yeah. They were going to win, we're going to win. And then we didn't win the final. And then they're back to being, villains. And it's ridiculous. And social media allows people who really shouldn't have, they can have an opinion, but they shouldn't have that opinion publicly in the way. And it can be so hurtful. But then again, you know, a lot of sports people get paid a lot of money. They have a lot of support around them. Not all of them do, but a lot of support around them. And they kind of know what they're letting themselves in for. And when it goes well, the fame is incredibly rewarding. So it's kind of swings and roundabouts, but I really do appreciate why some sports people in the more modern era really struggle with mental health issues, because it isn't all about them dealing with their own disappointment, but it's that level of public expectation that can be quite hurtful.
Yeah, I think, it's definitely a good point to consider about how the social media changes now, but there is probably more support now. There's obviously helplines, organisations, therapists as well for athletes. I know it doesn't make it a right thing. It doesn't make it anything good what happens on social media, but there is probably more support than there was when you were out. Well, it wasn't really spoken about when you were competing.
It wasn't spoken about, you're absolutely right. And the support I got was mainly from those closest to me. So my coach, John Anderson, who was famous for being the referee on Gladiators, the original Gladiators, you know, 3-2-1, he was magnificent. He was the best person to be around when things went wrong. And he wasn't a psychologist, but he knew what to say. And he knew what to say, when to say it. And he was fantastic, as were my family, my wife and others. And actually, as were other athletes. So, you know, I mentioned Brendan Foster earlier. I mean, he had ups and downs. And actually, the support you gave each other was crucial. But we didn't describe it as a mental health issue. We just described it as, I'm gutted, or, you know, this is... Yeah. You know, I don't want, why should I carry on? That sort of thing.
So how did you actually cope with losing. Did losing ever actually affect your everyday life? Did it ever affect others around you?
I think it's probably a good idea. My wife isn't here, or maybe it would be a good idea if she was. She could describe it. I think I dealt with defeat reasonably well. There were one or two moments we'd make a quick escape from the stadium if things had gone horribly wrong. I think I always faced up to the media. I don't think I ever broke down in front of the camera. I didn't, but I did on my own. So, there are kind of tears shed when you're on your own when it's gone horribly wrong. But the worst moment I had was Los Angeles, the Olympics in 1984. I was the world record holder, but I came last in the finals. Inevitably, there's a long story. But that was the worst I ever felt. And it took me days, it took me years to get over it. But actually, ironically, it was one of the best lessons I ever had because I then went off and had an operation in Germany. And coming back from that operation, I realized that actually what I really enjoyed was what I enjoyed when I first started, which is the joy of running. And so it rekindled my love of running. But I think it kind of it really hurt my it stopped me being brave enough to be ambitious in the future. So I think you deal with disappointment in different ways. And I think hopefully most people come out of it stronger through the disappointment. But it honestly, it really hurts at the time. And it hurts because we're not the most balanced of people, elite sports people. We're a little bit obsessive. We're a little bit selfish on occasions, and sometimes we're driven to the point of, as I said, obsession. So when things go well, it's great. When it doesn't go so well, you can really struggle. But I'm really fortunate now because I'm 71 years of age and can reflect back, and it was all a learning experience. It's all part of a great era, a great experience of being involved in international athletics. And I enjoy now sort of watching young elite athletes trying to do their best, but also aware that if it doesn't go well for them, that they've got to pick up the pieces.
Yeah, I think especially for a runner or an athlete such as yourself, obviously it's not a big career span. Olympics, well, they're only every 4 years, so then you feel like you're obliged to step up when it comes around. If you've missed it, then it's kind of like, how do you get back up? So obviously the self-motivation and belief, I guess, is what you have to just think about in these senses. But the next thing I was going to come on to is obviously the injuries that you obviously dealt with during that time. I know you had one in that 1984 that you just mentioned with was it in the final you had an injury?
I'd had the injury from April, but it was a groin injury and I was having cortisone injections. But I had to run a heat and a semi final and a final, and I broke down between the semi and the final. Yeah, injuries are right pain, but they're inevitable because you push your body to the limits. So it's a bit like a Formula One car. They might be very fast, but they're also pretty unreliable. And so you do that. And you mentioned earlier about the Olympics only come around once every 4 years. I mean, it's kind of crazy in our sport, really, that you're really judged. The ultimate judgment is one every 4 years. In tennis and in golf, you have four majors a year. You've only got to win one of them.
Exactly.
In football, you could, you might not win the Premiership, but the Premier League, but you could win the FA Cup, that sort of thing. So I think in Olympic sports, this the focus on the Olympic Games is immense. And whether by luck or judgment, trying to make sure you avoid injuries in the big years is a big skill. And certainly, I had my fair share of injuries. But also, there were amazing athletes that never made it because they got injured early on in their careers. At least I did get to the top.
So the 1984, you were injured in the final. There was illness. Did you have an illness in 1980? They said potentially there was a stomach bug going around.
Yeah, I've only got to look at if there's a stomach bug going around, I'll get it. And that's what happened in Moscow. It wasn't a big deal thing, but I had, I was sort of on and off the loo. And it just takes the edge off you. The thing about an athlete is if you run badly, it's never your fault. You can always find an excuse. The truth is, I never, other than 1976, when I ran really well, I didn't peak at the Olympics. I went to seven major games and came away with four medals, but the three that I didn't get a medal were the Olympic Games. And so in that sense, the real test that you give yourself, I didn't come up to what my level of expectation. But immensely, you know, grateful that I had that experience, that I went to Olympic Games and everything that goes with it. The winning is only a part of it, albeit a major part of it.
Yeah, I think as a runner it is slightly different. So would you say to be satisfied and achieve success, Olympics was kind of the goal?
I think that's the goal you set yourself. I've come across a lot of Olympic gold medalists who aren't satisfied, who still feel after their career is finished, there's a hole in their life. And I've come across, and obviously many that are incredibly satisfied, and equally I've come across lots of people who have very little regret. They gave it their best shot, and they whether it worked or not, they're just glad that they gave it their best shot. So I think that kind of fame, you know, the fame that comes with breaking a world record can be quite short-lived. And you know, with sport, you're only as good as your last race sort of statement is pretty obvious. But I think the crucial thing at the end of it is that you just reflect back and thought, what a fantastic experience it was. What a great adventure it was. And honestly, it is, you know, incredibly exciting to be involved in it. And, you know, the highs and the lows are just part and parcel of what you deal with. And I think for athletes that are struggling with mental health and it, you know, just from a distance, actually, it's their sport that will be part of their therapy. So if you're a runner and you've got mental health issues and you're struggling with the disappointment of injury or illness or failure at a championship, just get back to what you enjoy most, going for a run.
Yeah, I think you've definitely seen that at the top level. So, for example, on Amazon Prime, I've watched the Andy Murray documentary on how his hip was resurfaced. He clearly couldn't get back to that top level. I think he kind of knew that. I think we all knew that. But he just wanted to continue playing because he just loves playing the sport.
And I think that's a really important thing, is that so many people in sport do stupid things. But actually, it's not stupid to them because that's part of their personality. And, you know, if Andy Murray had packed up, if he'd have taken the advice of all of the so-called experts and packed up, he'd have always wondered, could I have got back? Could I have won Wimbledon once more? Could I have gone? And he's going to the Olympics. He'll be in Paris. And, you know, it's just part of the personality, is that when you set off on the journey to be an elite sports person, failure is probably the most likely outcome. And because there's a hell of a lot of people want to do what you want to do. So you have to be a little bit unbalanced in that level of ambition. And that stays with you. And I've got huge sympathy for people who don't retire at the top, who want to carry on, because that's what they love. And that's what, you know, that's what makes them the people they are.
After the 1984, did you realise that there was maybe not another opportunity to have a go at the Olympics? Or was it just about how can I win the next race? What was the mindset?
After 1984, I went months then without running. I then went and had an operation in Germany, and it took me more months to get back. And as I said, probably one of the things I learned from that was it rekindled my love of running, but it probably blunted my desire to go for it again. I was 30, I would have been 31 at the time, turning 32. I'd got to develop a career because it was the amateur era. And I think I felt that I just didn't have the stomach for another attempt at the Olympics. I did actually run the Olympic trials in 1988, but I was nowhere. And psychologically, I was nowhere. But I think Kelly Holmes won double gold medal in Athens at the age of, I think, 30, 31. No, actually older than that, 34, I think. But she got a medal in Sydney, but she wasn't satisfied with that. So her relative, you know, her disappointment in Sydney Olympics in 2000 was a motivation in 2004. And that's quite an unusual way round, but you know, she managed to use the disappointment of an Olympics, albeit she got a medal, to spur her on to getting double gold in Athens.
Yeah, that is quite remarkable. Moving on towards retirement now, was that a tough moment? Because I know for a lot of athletes, it's really tough to just accept that it's over. But I suppose, like you said, I know you stayed within the sport afterwards, so it was that what fulfilled your enjoyment, or was it tough at first?
Well, throughout my career, I worked. So I was a teacher. So I was able to combine my running and my work. And then my kind of work life developed. So I think I probably did say one day I've retired, but I'm not sure I ever did actually. So I don't think I've officially retired. So at the age of 71, maybe I should announce it. So it just sort of drifted, really. I made the decision that I was not going to go to be at the highest level. But you didn't have to publicly announce it. You just kind of cracked on and ran local races. So it was a smooth transition. The other thing I managed to do, which was really useful, was that in 1983, I was injured and not able to run in the first World Championships. And the BBC asked me to become a pundit, you know, to sit next to Des Lynam. And so I worked for the BBC from 1983 to 1997. And so that was a transition, a really smooth transition, away from being a performer to being on telly. And yeah. So I was really lucky that it wasn't, it didn't just drop off a cliff. But I think now professional sports people, when their professional career finishes, it can feel like they've fallen off a cliff. They, you know, then nobody knows them. They're not wanted. They're not paid. And they don't have any profile or any fame. And I think probably one of the biggest mental health challenges is actually life beyond professional sport. And I think that's where there is much more support now for people, but that's a crucial period of a person's life of how they reinvent themselves. Because, you know, often in professional sport, and I guess sports like football, it's an unreal world. And when they enter the real world beyond their career, it might come as something of a shock.
Was there any a point where the media kind of, I know it wasn't as big as it was than it is now, but was there anything in the media back then that really affected you in any way, like such as newspapers, anything like that? Or did you not focus on that? Was that not the focus?
I got some dodgy headlines, and there was one in the Coventry Telegraph, as it was then, Coventry Evening Telegraph. I came last in a race at Crystal Palace, and the headline, I was a youngster, but it said Moorcroft fails in Palace flop at Crystal Palace. And right. I actually stuck that on the front of my diary as a form of motivation. And actually the guy that wrote the article was a friend, and the article was very balanced, but the headline was a bit hysterical. But the headline made me smile and gave me a motivation. So I can't think of too many moments when I felt that the media response affected me personally. It probably made me smile, and probably at the time maybe kind of motivated me more. But I had no idea how people deal with the pressure now, and I would certainly hate it if you know, if there was an avalanche of social media response after a performance that was negative and deeply personal.
I think that's totally relatable. To as soon as you mentioned that, I just think Bukayo Saka, and I just think how the hate he got. And I think he kind of just used it as motivation. We saw the other week in the Euros, he scored the penalty that he got. All the abuse were online in 2020, which was just horrible to see. But you know what? It's really good to see. It's really great to see how he's kind of used it as motivation. It's almost like that's kind of like the winning mentality at the top level. You kind of just need to use it to spur you on, don't you, really?
You absolutely do. And with, you know, with Saka, and when he missed that penalty in the Euro final, it was more than just football. And I think that's another element of some of the abuse that people receive, whether it's gender related or ethnicity related. It's cruel beyond words. And so I think probably most sports people can accept being criticised as a sports person. But when it goes beyond that, it takes it to a new level, and a level that's completely unacceptable. But I imagine with Saka, obviously never met the bloke, but hopefully his mates, his teammates, others around him, those closest to him, managed to help him through that period. But then it must have given him huge satisfaction when he scored that crucial penalty at the Euros.
Yeah. And that's another thing I was going to come on to. Was there... Did you have other people around you? Was there anyone in particular that really helped you during a time when you may have been struggling, or maybe when you broke the world record in Oslo, or any other time where emotions were high?
When I broke the world record, our son had just been born, Paul, who's now 43. So if you begin to sort of get above yourself and feel you're a bit special, then your children bring you down to earth wonderfully well very early on. Also, you know, the likes of Paul, my son, when things went badly, you just look at him. Right? He was probably three or four in Los Angeles, and you just look at him, you feel all that love, and you think it's only a race. My coach, John Anderson, was terrific. There were many occasions. He got a reputation of being a real hard man, and he is. But he was wonderful when things went wrong. And obviously my wife and has been great throughout it all, really understood me, knew what to say. And I think the crucial thing, and I think this is a difference now, is that people saw me as a person, not as a performer. So me, the person, was more important than the performance. Now there's always a danger with football or with lottery-funded athletes is that sports people are primarily judged as performers, as by their performance, not as who they are.
Yeah, I think that's a very important point to mention.
And sorry, there's one other thing I was going to say is that, you know, in terms of sports people, is that particularly if you're elite, wealthy, high profile, you can believe that everybody's your friend, and you can believe that actually, you know, everybody's opinion matters. Actually, when it comes down to it, there's only a relatively small number of people who really matter in your life, and you know who those are.
Yeah, I think I totally agree with that. When you win your first Commonwealth Games gold, you're at the age of 25, I want to say.
25, 1978, yes.
So obviously, it 25, it's obviously probably in the prime of your career, towards the prime of your career. But did you feel like, or when you maybe before then, were you thinking, oh, well, if I don't win now, then what's going to happen?
I think I went to the Commonwealth Games hoping to get a medal. And as I said to you beforehand, I kind of knew that Philbert, who is a friend and as a hero, wasn't at his best. So I kind of knew then that I had a chance of beating him, and I did, only just. He came second. And I shared with Brendan Foster, and he also got a gold medal. So I think it fulfilled an ambition, which was to win a major gold, which I did. And I then went on shortly after that to the European Championships and raced Steve Ovett, who hadn't run the Commonwealth. And I'd got the fastest time in the world, but he was the guy with a big reputation. And he beat me, because he was better than me. I was really gutted with that bronze medal. Now, as I reflect back, I think that's probably what I deserved. So I don't have a problem. But you go from being, wouldn't it be great to get to go to the Olympics or go to the Commonwealth Games? So wouldn't it be great to get to the final? Wouldn't it be great to get to the medal? My goodness, I'm a gold medalist. And then how can I keep that going? So you constantly reassess your ambitions and push further. And you know, there's multiple gold medalists who want more.
So mind is like a mental health type. They work with the EFL and football and stuff like that. They kind of found that one in four people these days kind of suffer from mental health. But obviously there are more people coming out in sport about how they're struggling. Is there any advice you'd potentially give to people that are upcoming or their goals are to be in professional sport?
It's great that organisations like Mind and others give support. There must have been people. There would have been people when I was competing, I know it myself, who go through ups and downs, and there's days when you feel kind of depressed. But there must have been people whose mental health was really severely impacted in those days, but they couldn't talk about it. Nobody could help them.
Was it not socially acceptable then?
Exactly, yeah. So it was pull yourself together sort of thing. So it's good now that there is support. What I would say is, and it's a very simple truth for youngsters is the only thing you can ever be is do your best, and you know, if you can honestly say, and you've really got to be honest, I absolutely did my best, then what more can you ever do? And don't judge yourself by what other people feel. Don't necessarily judge yourself by the medals you win or the you know, the accolades you get, but judge yourself by whether you gave it your absolute best shot. And if you did, you can walk away with your head held high. And I think it's the challenge bit in sport that people have to embrace rather than the accolades or the fame or the judgments of others. Easy to say, not so easy to do.
Yeah, I think especially when, another example that just comes to mind is when you saw what happened with Lewis Hamilton in the 2020, when he kind of got cheated into not winning, let's say the FIA didn't exactly follow the rules and regs. No. And then from there, I think the media just got to him and he just came off all platforms. Same with some of the England players back in 2020. I think But it is tough out there. But I think you kind of, like you said, you've got to kind of just focus on yourself.
I imagine if Hamilton never gets another world championships, it'll still keep him awake at night to think of what if, what if, what if. And that's a bloke who's won more Formula One races than anyone else. Sorry if I get this wrong. It is the equal highest number of world championships, but he'll still think there's something missing. And the thing that will get to him is that it wasn't his fault. So I think that's something that if you feel, rightly or wrongly, that you've been cheated out of something, it must make the mental anguish even tougher to handle. I've no complaints about it in my career. Pretty much every time I was beaten by a better athlete.
Do you think the social media platforms kind of play a part with that? Obviously, people are hidden behind a phone and they're kind of, well, I'm not going to get found out about this, so therefore I can just take advantage of the athlete. He didn't win, so I can just say all this about him for a reaction.
It's really sad that social media, it's so easy, isn't it? You pick up a phone, you throw a whole load of abuse at a person who, for that moment, has disappointed you because, you know, we didn't win the Euros or whatever. And the hurt that creates is immense. And as you rightly say, they'll probably never be found out. And I think I've seen on occasions when a person who's sent a social media tweet that is massively abusive and they've been found out and they've kind of said, I didn't really mean it. You know, I wish I hadn't. It was just in the spur of the moment. But it's the easiest thing to do, and the impact could be immeasurable.
Yeah, I think what's even worse to see as well is sometimes that can actually affect someone's not only mental health, but then their performance. So it actually may affect the performance. I don't know if you ever had that at a point where did it ever get to the point in your mind where you were struggling so much that it kind of affected your performance? You went, oh, well, if I maybe wasn't experiencing that, I might have got a better result, or if I would have prepared for it better, dealt with it better.
What I did sometimes struggle with, and it's hard, is if you're going into a major games, and your performances before getting to the major games are pretty bad, it's hard to get into your mind to say, I haven't become a bad athlete overnight. And I'll give you an example, but Sebastian Coe in 1980, there was a great rivalry between him and Steve Ovett. And Sebastian Coe was supposed to win the 800 metres and Steve Ovett the 1500. Well, in the 800, Steve Ovett won it and Coe got beaten. Now, I reckon most people would have just fallen apart then. But what Coe was able to do, and it showed great strength of character, but also having his dad and others around him, was say, I haven't become a bad athlete overnight. And he managed to put the disappointment of losing to Steve Ovett in the 800 to one side and then focus on having another opportunity and ultimately win the 1500. Now, I think in the modern era, Coe would have got hammered on social media for losing the 800. And he, I think he's strong enough person to have just dealt with it. But that could have got to him, and it could have got to any athlete who has that level of disappointment but isn't allowed to deal with the disappointment on their own.
Yeah, I think in talking about, again, for athletes, sports stars, such a short career span, it is about how you get over that next hurdle.
It is, and, you know, there's very few athletes, sports people, go through their career and pretty much everything goes right.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you have to deal with a lot. Obviously, being the first Brit to hold the 5,000 meters world record since Gordon Pirie in 1956. I mean, that's quite a statement. I'm sure you had to deal with quite a lot.
Yeah, I mean, half of Africa have run faster than me now, so it's things have moved on hugely. But I am pretty proud of the fact I was the last non-African to hold the world record for the 5,000. But it's astonishing how fast they run now, and, you know, times nearly half a minute faster than me, which is breathtaking.
Yeah, well, that seems to be everything. I really appreciate you coming on to talk to me today about mental health and your own experiences and challenges at the top level.
Thanks very much, Galuca. It's been a pleasure.
Unfortunately, that's all we have time for from the Gold Commonwealth Games winner and his sporting experiences at the top level. Thanks for watching Sport Within the Mind podcast. Be sure to check out any of the previous episodes you may have missed on Captivate.fm. Until then, it's bye for now.